Blog Talk Radio.
Of what's happening Tuesday, January 2nd, 2018. And we want to give a special Happy Revolution Day. Actually, it was yesterday, to the people of Haiti and the Haitian Revolution. And long live Toussaint Louverture. Long live General Essaline. And we want to acknowledge that at a time when it looks like people from the continent of Africa are being enslaved all over the globe, the memory of the success of that revolutionary war against oppression and slavery still rings true, and what they did then, we can do now. I want to also send a shout out to our brother, one of our usual suspects, Brother Tom. He's not with us this evening, but he will be listening in, and we hope he'll recover soon. We will be reading some of the minutes from the Manhattan Greens as it impacts on the tax bill that was just passed, however, so he will definitely be here in spirit. And before we acknowledge all the rest of our warriors who survived 2017, a year of Trump, I want to give you information about a very important event that's coming up. And this event deals with the MOVE and MAMIA coalition. As you know, this is the year to support our political prisoners and bring them home. If not now, then when? If not us, than who. And so we have to acknowledge that this era, we have to do more and we have to do it better. With that in mind, you should know, and I will only give you a teaser, that Sister Ramona Africa will be featured, and she will be discussing and talking about the MOVE situation, and it's going to be next Tuesday, January 9th. I will give you more updates later, but just put it in your calendar. Next Tuesday, January 9th, you must leave your calendar open to hear Sister Ramona Africa. Brother Ralph is in the house.
Good evening, my sisters and brothers. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. Because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, as Sister Betty mentioned, Happy New Year, the beginning of the new year. And the question today is, as it has always been and will always be, what way forward? Where do we go from here? Now, the new year is not new. It's just a date on the calendar. And we use that to focus, rededicate ourselves, to clarify the direction that we must take from this moment forward. And as Sister Betty has mentioned, Revolution Day in Haiti, 1804, January 1st, is celebrated as Revolution Day in Haiti. But it is Revolution Day in the Western Hemisphere. And what did that revolution mean? Well, there are many examples that we can use of the past to go forward. We see that the Haitian Revolution did what other revolutions said they were going to do. And one of the things I want to point out about the Haitian Revolution and what they did was declared that everyone who, or anyone who reached those shores, was a citizen and there would be no more slavery. I think that's a great leap forward. Everyone who reaches the shores is a citizen, and no more slavery. Unlike what we are experiencing in the United States in terms of so-called citizenship and the denial of citizenship, for people who have been here many years. People who came here looking for the American dream, and we must ask ourselves, what part of the American dream are we interested in working towards? And I would suggest to you that for 90% of the people, whatever dream that is that they were looking for is fading. fading fast, and the American people have not reached out to regain that dream. Now, we can discuss who we are, who's on our side, and where do we want to go with this American dream, what it is, and how does this relate to our reaction to national and international events. Well, I'm going to go back home, very close to what I know and what I have experienced. And one of the things that's in my mind, and this is a first for us all again to have a program on a new year without our dear sister Lynn, so I'm going to take a moment to talk about our sister Lynn in 1962 when she came to Harlem and asked me, what is this place? She was born in Brooklyn in Swedish Hospital and lived not 4 miles from the center of Harlem, was the valedictorian of every class she was ever in, but she did not know that Harlem existed, and she did not know that Harlem existed all over the country. And her question was, what is this place? What does it mean? But that she had been lied to. Now I get to the crux of our whole discussion. 1 year later, she made the observation that we will win, we can win, when white people join with black people fighting for liberation, when white people fight to give up white skin privilege. She understood this after 1 year involvement in the movement. Can it be done? I leap forward or backward to John Brown working for liberation. And we find out that while he was at Harper's Ferry, not 10 miles away were 100 black men ready to fight for their liberation. And so it comes down to the solution. We will win when we are willing to win together. That means we must include all struggles involved in this American dream: citizenship, education, and all of the elements that we see as our American dream. And today, we see all over the country, people are willing to give up one of the most valuable assets of the so-called American dream, that is public education, to be able to get any education at all. We're going into charter schools. We're going in the wrong direction, in the opposite direction. We have had many examples of how to get there, how to get to a free society. But we see the Republican Party, which makes no bones about their determination for wealth for the few. And we see the other party, the Democratic Party, involved in the same struggle. And we have to decide where we are in that struggle. We have a Democratic Party and a Democratic-led party leading the black community 100%, or 99.9% of the black Democratic politicians follow, and they're trying to reinvent Hillary Clinton the slaver. And I say those words very, very, very clearly, the slaver, because if you go to the Black Agenda Report, they will explain in detail how the American prison labor is slave labor, and the Haitians are making less money than the American slave prison labor. Hillary Clinton and Brother Bill took much of the money that was sent to from international funds to support the earthquake-ridden Haiti to money that was sent for recovery. They stole and loaned it to corporations to build factories to have the Haitians work at slave wages. I'm talking 40 cents an hour. I'm talking 30 cents an hour. I could go on. But we have the example of how to move forward by many people, and that the Haitian Revolution has to be one of the examples we have to follow. John Brown has to be another example that we have to follow, and we have to have our own solution. Every revolution has its own solutions and its own politic, and we have to recreate the American politic to end the slave, outrageous capitalist system. Sister Betty.
All right. Thank you, Brother Ralph. As we continue, we want to give a shout-out to all of our listening audience, and we want you to understand that the whole purpose of our program is to fight metaphysical imperialism. You've heard of colonial imperialism. You've heard of the imperialism that takes your country and takes your resources, but you must deal with the imperialism that takes your soul, that takes your mind, and makes you think your friends are your enemy and your enemy are your friends. And that's what this program addresses. With that in mind, I want to give you some brief notes from the Green Party Manhattan minutes. It says, if you are going to analyze what the Trump administration will do with this so-called tax bill, it will reduce the present tax rate of the super rich from 39% to 21%, from 39% to 21%. But most of the working class and middle class will continue to pay up to 37% in taxes. In any case, the average tax rate of the super rich was much less than 39% because of the loopholes in the tax code. In an effort not to anger the middle class, the tax proposal will raise the standard deduction from $6,000 to $12,000 for those who do not, I repeat, do not itemize deductions. Those who are unemployed or have low incomes do not pay taxes, but both the middle class and the lower classes will still not significantly benefit or suffer from the tax proposal. It is estimated that at least 70% of the tax cuts will go to the super rich. The tax on inheritance of over $1 million will be eliminated. And it goes on. We just want to give you some idea of what we are talking about. Without further ado, we're going to go to Brother Larry, and we've got our poet in residence who is back from a triumphant program on December the 28th. And without further ado, Brother Larry Pinckney, a former political prisoner who followed the quote of Jaleel Muntakeem and was his own liberator and a Black Panther. Your mic is open.
Thank you very much. My greetings, love, and strength to all of us, and I say all of us, including especially the listening audience. As always, I look forward to hearing from everyone. Thank you very, very much, Sister Professor Betty Davis and Brother Ralph Poynter. Let me say this. In this quote-unquote new year of 2018, I want to be this evening as uplifting as I possibly can. not only to you, but to myself. I want to begin by reminding us all of what our struggle, what the struggle is really all about for black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. In other words, for humanity. Let us not lose our humanity while we struggle to gain or regain our humanity. Let me repeat that. Let us not lose our humanity while we struggle to gain or regain our humanity. I want to, like I said, I want to be very uplifting this evening. I want us all to remember, and I'm paraphrasing the words of Frederick Douglass, who said that no person can put a chain around the ankle of his fellow human without at last binding the other end fastened about his or her own neck. Think about that. I think that we should always remember that, that whether we like it or not, we are all in this struggle together, and we had better damn well find a way of reaching out to our brothers and sisters, black, white, brown, red, or yellow. Doesn't matter. The other thing that I would like to quote or paraphrase, and this is especially for you, Brother Raymond Nat Turner, especially for us all, but especially you, our artist poet in-house. You know, this was what Brother James Baldwin said. He said that the precise role of the artist then is to illuminate that darkness, blaze roads through vast forests, so that we will not, in all our doing, we will not lose sight of its purpose, which is, after all, to make the world a more human dwelling place, unquote. And that's, of course, what our resident artist, resident poet, Brother Nat Turner, always does with his incisive poetry. I want to move quickly on. And like I said, I want to be uplifting tonight. I want us all to be uplifting because the struggle continues. La lucha continúa. It continues. And it will be intensified. Let us go forth with, let us rejoice. You know, let us really rejoice. Let us rejoice that we are alive, that we have the ability and the capability to reach out and touch. Remember that old song? Who was it? Dinah Ross, reach out and touch. We can do that. That's what we've got to do. And speaking of artists, not only of our dear brother Raymond Nat Turner, but previous artists, I think of Nina Simone. Nina, who said, she did a couple of songs that just, touched my soul, touched my spirit. One of them is called Who Am I? Just listen to it. Who Am I? You can find it on her album. Well, you can tell I'm old. I say album.
Albums are coming back. Albums are coming back.
But you'll love the song, Who Am I? And the other song, which happens to be right after it, on the same album or CD, is the Nina Simone and Piano CD or album. The other song, and that's, and I'm about to tell you this because this is how I look at every quote-unquote new year that comes. I think of Nina's wonderful song, Another Spring. You know, the way it starts off, you feel kind of down, but by the time she finishes, by the time she finishes that song, you realize that it's deeper than that and that we've got every reason, every motivation to continue, because that spring is not just that spring. It's not just a physical spring. So if you guys, you folks, brothers and sisters, if you get the chance, listen to those two songs, Who Am I? And their song, Another Spring, both by the late, great, incomparable Nina Simone. Finally, let us remember the wonderful, wonderful, powerful words of that brother from back in the day, Donny Hathaway, in his song, Someday We'll All Be Free.
Right.
If you haven't heard that song, Google it, put it on. And you know what? The beginning you might cry, but at the end you're going to just be filled with joy. You're going to be filled with joy. Again, the song is entitled Someday We'll All Be Free, Donny Hathaway. So let me end quickly by saying that I was honored and am honored to have been among, I'm sure, thousands of people who received an update regarding our political prisoner, one of our political prisoners, Leonard Peltier, who they now have in Tampa, Florida, in the gulag. And it was so uplifting to read the words, not only from Brother Leonard, who has been incarcerated in the gulag death system, the gulag death chambers, since 1976. Okay, but his words were so uplifting. And his supporters, and in this particular case, I'm talking about one of his attorneys, who pointed out that for the, quote, new year, they laid out the goals. And one of those goals was to expose people to how he was set up and framed. Okay, and what we can do about it, and to make links between it, it's not just about Leonard or Mumia, or I can go, it's an endless list, as we all know. But it's about all of us, all of us. Why? Because as Donny Hathaway sang, someday we'll all be free. But we'll only be free if we make the connections. And I happen to be in a very spiritual mood tonight. Sorry about that. But sometimes, you know, that old spiritual, if the spirit moves you, you got to move. But it's a revolutionary spiritual move. And I just want to share that with you, the words that, and I'm not going to take up any more time, but I just want to say that it was so wonderful to hear, to read the words from Leonard and from one of his attorneys. We are so blessed, all of us. We are blessed to have each other. Let us not forget that. We are blessed to have each other. So, yes, I say Happy New Year, but not happy in the sense of a birthday party, but happy in the sense that the struggle continues and that we have each other, and in the spirit of John Brown, in the spirit of Sister Lynn Stewart, in the spirit of Frederick Douglass, in the spirit of all of our warriors and warriors, let us continue. We will continue, and someday, with hard work, determination, and education, someday, sooner than they think, we'll all be free. Thank you so much. Free our political prisoners. All power to the people.
Thank you, Brother Larry. Thank you.
That was beautiful.
Thank you for those uplifted words. They were truly inspirational. I want to continue and let you know that Tuesday, I started with this, is going to be January 9, 2018 at 6 p.m., a dialogue on white supremacy with Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz and Ramona Africa. As you know, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz has authored another book. Her previous book dealt with the Native American Holocaust. This book is called Loaded, A Disarming History of the Second Amendment. And what she points out is a fallacy to think that this whole discussion of guns is not native to America. The whole purpose of the Second Amendment was not to free us, but to keep slaves enslaved and to control the Indian population and to perpetuate genocide. And she and Ramona Africa, along with clips of the oral history of her life and the MOVE bombing, will be having a discussion and an analysis of just what this means in our culture and why no one in their right mind should be against self-defense and self-determination, given the nature of this white settler nation that we are in. It is a must-see, a must-hear, a must-attend. It's at the recital hall, the first floor of the Graduate Center in Manhattan, New York City, 365 Fifth Avenue. Again, this coming January 9th, Tuesday at 6 p.m., you must make this event if you are in New York City. Without further ado, unless Brother Ralph wants to make a comment, we will open our mic for Brother Nat Turner and welcome him back, Ms. Sims.
Yes, we must welcome back Brother Nat Turner, who does such a tremendous job in education and being educated while being entertained. And on the issue of guns, you know where I stand. And I use the words again of our dear departed Sister Lynn Stewart, who said, how is it that those people who spend so much time speaking about human rights are so willing to give up the most basic human right of all, that is the right of self-defense? And I don't care if you defend people. Brother Nat Turner, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Your mic is open.
Okay. This piece is dedicated to a young warrior who has joined the ancestors, I think too soon, but in any case, it's for Erica Garner. Three little words for two EGs. One, two, three. Three on one. Life hanging on padded arms of a windpipe crushing Nazi thug. Three little words, 12 letters, 11 times. Not artful air escaping sides of a saxophonist's mouth. Song for her father, fire breathing, bullhorn, blues shouter, drum major, marching, meeting, texting, tweeting, writing, raising roofs of consciousness, standing up, sitting in, dying in, boycotting, blockading, refusing rest, chasing the fugitive, justice. One, two, three. Three on one, not a broken bicycle pump or blacksmith's bellows. Three little words, 12 letters, 11 times. Not cold talker, father to daughter. Membership in the club, wanting no new members. Club never giving her space to catch her breath. Know how it feels to breathe free instead of crying herself to sleep, listening for footsteps of justice. One, two, three. Three on one. Heart attack, asthma, cancer, coma. Her carry-ons, boarding non-stops, tearing her heart into 1,000 tender shards. Three little words, 12 letters, 11 times. Cold talker, daughter to father. Please put politicians' thoughts and prayers out with promises and dirty diapers.
Wow.
Wow.
Breath every time, I will never hear that again, three little words without thinking of this poem. And I can't tell you, I don't want to come to tears in the new year, but we must end this type of need for poetry when we talk about the death of our people without a real strategy of fighting back. And I'm going to get on my soapbox and say step one is to free our political prisoners who understood and tried to prevent this. They are suffering. We must free them. Step one, and I'm going to step back and have Sister Betty on the mic.
Thank you, Brother Nat Turner.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Thank you. Within the context of the slavery, chattel slavery that's come back in Africa, Libya, and in Haiti, and which will soon be in Puerto Rico if we don't rise up and fight against it. That poem reminds us that our job is to guarantee the future of the young unto the seventh generation. This is what
That's
the right. Cree of the nations in this country said, Cree, C-R-E-E. The Cree nation said, you should make your decisions based on the impact unto the seventh generation. And if we don't stand up, don't rise up, we will not have a seventh generation. Within that context, before we turn the mic over to Sister Ann of New York City, Jericho, I want you to please stay tuned because Brother Joel is going to be warning us about some very alarming information that is not being covered by the press. But before we get to that, again, one of the things you should understand is black children will suffer most from the proposed tax reform bill. We are indebted to the Black New Yorkers for Educational Excellence for this bit of information, which is no rocket scientist in order to come to that conclusion. But still, it's important to know that the proposed tax bill will disproportionately impact negatively on black children by reducing support to education, health care, workforce development, college support, rental assistance, food and nutrition, and more. 10% of white people are poor. However, 28% of black people are poor, 38% of whom are black children, the largest percentage of any demographic in America that are poor. This proposed tax reform bill will reinforce the median income of black Americans to zero in 35 years, 2053. Black children not yet born will be born into the deepest poverty for generations to come. Not to mention what this will impact on in terms of the national debt. There will be limits on deductions for state and local property. There will be limits and deductions on mortgages. Eliminates deductions for state or local income or sales taxes. And it goes on and on. It limits pre-tax contributions to 401k plans. It eliminates spousal support tax breaks. And if you don't think that's hitting at the middle class, I don't know what you think. Without further ado, however, we have an extensive report from Sister Ann Lamb of New York City, Jericho, about some of the health issues and some of the legal issues and some of the upcoming events for our political prisons. But before that, Brother Ralph wants to talk to us.
I know we have a lot of about what the tax plan is doing, what Mr. Trump is doing, what the Republicans are doing, but they will be able to do it as long as they continue shouting nigger, nigger in code words. George Wallace, almost came to the presidency shouting nigger, nigger, and it had nothing to do with improving the existence
white.
white in America. But it doesn't matter. It didn't matter then. It doesn't matter today. It is not Russia. It is not taxes. It is not anything but nigger, nigger. Keep those folks down. And there is a significant number of white folk who will vote for that. Cut their nose to spite their faces because they're involved too. And, you know, they're into the chip. Now they finally figured it. Their children, the children's health insurance plan is for them. That will be cut. And they're beginning to scream, reinstate that. Well, you can't mess with that. He has done his tax thing, and they went along with it for their own reasons, and now their noses will be cut. And I could go on and on. It's race, and we're going to take program next week, possibly, to discuss the philosophy, the underlying philosophy of America. This America, this white Europe, is racism, the categorization of people around color. That's for next week. Sister Betty, Sister Ann.
All right, Sister Ann, your mic is open. And Brother Joel, we are anticipating your discussion this evening. We hope everybody will hang in there and respond to what Brother Joel has discovered through his research. He is constantly researching what the Death Star is up to. Sister Ann, your mic is open.
Thank you so much. We do have quite a few reports this week. A lot of things have been going on since we last spoke on the air. So I'll start with some good news, because it's always nice to have some good news. Jan Lahman has been transferred to USP McCreary. So there's one good news about that. He is now in General Pop. He is no longer in the hall. We are happy to report. Even though, you know, he spent, like, I think something like 275 days in the hole for, you know, the terrible crime of writing Day Without a Woman Strike in support of the, he called the Thank You Sisters, and also his farewell thoughts to my friend Lynn Stewart. So somehow that was, you know, some, you know, threatening the security of the prison. But he's not going to CMU, and he's not in the hole, and he's in General Pop. And the next thing that, of course, we will be focusing on is his upcoming parole hearing. Jan is 69
right.
years old, right? So we want to bring him home. So that's some good news. So I think we'd start with that. Now, health. I was just putting up here on JerichoNY.org. Mumia is having serious, serious problems once again with his skin. He told his wife he can't take it anymore. You know, he's got this itching all over his body. It sounds very similar to what Seth is going through. And so he has this really severe skin condition, and he can't even sleep at night because he's, like, always itchy all the time, and he's been scratching himself so much that he's actually making himself bleed. And so his skin is, like, all leathery and stuff again, like it was when he was really suffering from the Hep C. So, of course, instead of a hands-on exam by an expert dermatologist, the doc's doctor had a teleconference with Mumia, after which ultraviolet, which is UVB treatment, and Dupixent were recommended. So, Mumia stopped unsupervised self-administered UV treatment last year because his skin got burns. Mumia's UVB treatment should be safely administered at a hospital with a narrowband UVD, reducing the risk of burns, and it is more effective than broadband UVD. So he needs a full diagnostic workup before he takes this new medicine, which can have very serious side effects. This Dupixent, if it's administered incorrectly outside of a hospital setting, which we know docs is very good at doing. And, of course, you know, he's been in prison for 36 years for, you know, a crime everybody knows he didn't commit. So, you know, the doc's continuing failure to effectively diagnose and treat the severe skin disease is nothing less than torture. It is one more reason that Mumia should be released from prison now. So people are asking that we call three numbers. Call the superintendent at SCI Mahanoy. Her name is Teresa Del Balso. This will all be up on JerichoNY.org so you can, you know, get it. But the number is 570-773-2158. I repeat, 570-773-2158. That is The superintendent at the prison where Mumia is, Teresa Del Balso. Call the Pennsylvania Secretary of Corrections, John E. Wetzel. Now, we've called Mr. Wetzel many times in the past, so it doesn't hurt to call him again. 717-728-4109. That's 717-728-4109. And the Pennsylvania Department of Health Acting Secretary, Dr. Rachel Levine, 717-787-9857. Once again, that's 717-787-9857. Demand that Mumia be taken to an independent medical facility such as Geisinger Hospital, as he was in 2015, which has the expertise to provide thorough hands-on diagnostic evaluation and offer supervised patient care. And the other thing we all need to do is, on January 17th, anybody who can get to Philadelphia, we need to pack the court because the ongoing new legal case, which could lead to Mumia's freedom, is having an evidentiary hearing that day. Mumia will not be there, but we need to be there. So they see that the community is paying attention and we're interested and we want to know what's going on. And there's a Facebook event for that. So, as I say, I just put it up on New York, on JerichoNY.org. You scroll down the left-hand side, you'll see make these phone calls for Moo. So, yes, please do that. That's very important. And, you know, we need to get everybody taken care of. Simultaneously, our dear brother Robert Seth Hayes was taken on an emergency basis to Albany Medical Center sometime Friday evening. As far as I know, since he has not called me today, he is still in Albany Medical Center. So apparently, according to his friend who always calls, his sugars were mad high, apparently almost in coma range. He said he looked really out of it, didn't seem to know where he was or what he was doing, and got rushed off to the clinic. And Floyd didn't realize that they had taken him to the outside hospital. He thought that he was still there. That's the only reason he didn't call me that Friday. He thought he was downstairs in the infirmary, the so-called infirmary, which is like a giant shoe, and there's no medical personnel there whatsoever. Anyway, I found out because Eve Rosan, his lawyer, sent an email very early in the morning on Saturday, and I was sorry because somebody else was going up with a little group of six people to call out both Jaleel and Seth, and it was too late to let them know at that point, you know, that Seth was not there, but they actually were able to all go visit Jaleel, you know, like in tandas. They couldn't go all at once, but three and then on the other three, you know, like split it up. But they found out when they got there, you know, that he wasn't there. I was visiting Jaleel with my friend Ann Jaffe, and I knew that, you know, Seth wasn't there. So you know how cold it's been. So in the morning, if you're making a phone call from Sullivan Correctional Facility, you must be in the yard. So at like 8:30 in the morning, I get this phone call from Jaleel because he was trying to find out what had happened to Seth, right? So I told him, we're on our way. We're almost there. You know, we'll talk to you soon. So when we got there, when he came out, he said that Seth's friend had said that he thought that Seth was in the infirmary. So I said, well, if that is so, I will leave with the 12:30 escort and I will go to the infirmary. And so Jaleel was cute. He says, well, both of you don't have to go, do you? I said, no, I will go. I think, you know, Ann is a little new to visiting prisoners, and that infirmary, those infirmary staff are really nasty. So I figured, you know, like, I'm used to that. I can do it. But so I went up to the front desk to find out, you know, if he was there or not. And one guy is a younger guy. He doesn't usually work in the visiting room. And he said, I don't usually work here. And I said, yeah, I know. I haven't seen you here before. The other guy was just being curmudgeonly. You know, he didn't want to say, I can't tell you where he is. I said, I'm not asking you to tell me where he is. I'm asking you to tell me where he is not. Is he in the infirmary? You could tell me this. Oh, no, he couldn't tell me this. So we waited a little while, and the sergeant came out. So I said, oh, the white shirt, I'll go get him. And he actually did say, I mean, as soon as I started talking, you know, with my other friend that I visit regularly, Robert Seth Hayes, he said, oh, yes, no, he is not here. He is not in the facility. So I was relieved, actually. I would much prefer him to be at Albany Medical Center where he gets good medical care and where he prefers to be than to be down in that thing that they call an infirmary, which is in total violation of every single Nelson Mandela rule about how medical care is supposed to be in prisons. So, you know, as I say, we still don't know what his status is, but he's obviously not back, because I'm sure he would have called if he were, and haven't heard from him today. Jaleel says to wish everybody, you know, a fruitful and struggle-filled new year. And he has just finished writing the fourth installment of his wonderful primer on New African History of Struggle and Perspective. I just got it today, so it's not up on Free Jaleel yet, but it probably will be by later tonight. And it's all about A. Philip Randolph. Really interesting. So that'll be really good to read. I'm looking forward to that. And what other fun news did we have besides all that? I think that's it for the Mo, but, you know, we have Seth now in the hospital. We don't know exactly, you know, under what circumstances. His family is HIPAA authorized. His daughter and his granddaughter were calling up to Albany Medical Center to try to find stuff out. They have not been able to find out very much at all. So the most we've heard is from Seth's friend, that it seemed that his sugars were mad high. He looked like he was practically comatose, and they rushed him off to Albany Medical Center. So obviously it wasn't really minor, because obviously he is still there. So I'm hoping that while he's there, once his sugars get stabilized and he can, you know, think better, because you can't think when your sugars are going up and down like this, to remind him, you know, tell the doctors about the ulcers. He has the same kind of thing with the itching skin. He's always scratching himself. It's horrible. He can't sleep. Well, Mia has the same thing. You know, it's the same problem. What it's related to, we don't know. But, you know, in terms of the symptoms, they're exactly the same. So I hope he remembers, tell the doctors up there all about that. It's all related to his diabetes. Tell the doctors about your falling down and the diabetic neuropathy. And let them look at all of that, you know, in a sort of holistic way. You know, unfortunately, he will eventually be brought back to Sullivan, and then things will deteriorate again. But for the moment, you know, we can, I would say everybody, please keep, you know, Seth in your thoughts and keep Mumia in your thoughts. Make those phone calls for Mumia. We've saved people's lives many times by doing phone calls. You know, we've been doing it for 18 years for Seth. He's still with us, thank God, which, you know, many people think is a miracle, and I could agree on that. And, you know, we will continue, as I was very happy with Larry's wonderful. It was very uplifting, Larry. Thank you so much. We really need that, because sometimes we all feel like Sisyphus. You know, we roll the rock up the hill, and it rolls back over us. So
Thank you.
You know, it really helps a lot, because, you know, this kind of ongoing struggle and this ongoing, you know, horrible situation of our political prisoners, one of the reasons we're going to try to bring back the international jurists and have the international community at least try to do something. We know that the United States doesn't care about that, but at least, you know, in the minds, you know, it will help us hopefully rebuild and, you know, a movement, a real movement around the issue of our political prisoners and the conditions in which they are so horribly treated.
Thank you
so
for that.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
the other thing
we,
that will be
for the
up,
new year and
for
the old year, we still have Ann.
All right.
Thank God.
Brother Joel, mic is open. Brother Joel,
love Brother
we
Joel.
Can hear you.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I wanted to, I had sent out an email post, what this is about is that many people don't know, and there are very few ways to even find out about it, but on December 21st, effective immediately, Donald Trump put out an executive order, and the executive order was for the purpose of blocking bank accounts, funds, and so on of what they're labeling human rights abusers and human rights abusers and corrupt elements. I want to say that if they went after human rights abusers and corrupt elements, the first ones they would have to go after would be themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a years-long casino owner with a bankruptcy racket and tied to the corruption of big real estate in New York and around the world. Obviously super corrupt. I don't think there was anyone that openly corrupt that's ever publicly sought office with that kind of a background known about him. I guess except for the Rockefeller, we had him as governor and butcher of Attica. Even there, it was distinguished that he was just a monopolist whose crimes were so big that that the word corruption underestimates him. It's not usually the word. It's like if you steal on a scale like that, you're not considered a thief. You're just considered a monopolist or whatever other term it might be. But at any rate, the Trump administration is putting out this executive order in which he says they can go all around the world and just freeze people's bank accounts that they deem to be in violation of human rights or corrupt. And these types of labels are very broad and very vague and can be used as a pretext to go after almost anyone. And the really scary thing about this also is that even though the executive order is not merely a law enforcement type function to freeze certain racketeers' bank accounts, but it's coupled with a declaration of national emergency. And when a national emergency is declared, it expands the power of the presidency under color of law, although it's totally unconstitutional. The Constitution doesn't say that the limits of presidential powers are suspended and that you could build a police state simply by claiming that a national emergency exists. And usually it's a pretext towards martial law, and usually has only been declared in times of war and serious hostilities. So this is something that's coming out of the blue as a declaration of national emergency. And one of the scariest things is the way that it sneaks past everybody, because even though a declaration of national emergency is usually covered in the media, this is totally unmentioned. In fact, when I first read about it, I thought, well, this is probably fake news, and maybe it's a exaggeration. But when I looked it up, and there it is on whitehouse.gov under presidential actions. So it's authenticated as something that's being put out on the official White House website. And this is aimed specifically, they say, at foreign nationals, whatever that means, but also that any accomplices or conspirators or collaborators or those who attempt to be such can also be have their bank accounts frozen. And the way that the thing is worded, if you read it, it slides very ominously into possible criminal action against a lot of people, and at least the part about confiscating the bank accounts and free of different entities, which it spells out. Entities means anything from a government to a corporation to a company down to an individual. All of these things are entities, and there's no due process about freezing the assets, which perhaps it's not much of a surprise. Most people, though, don't know that in most states, the police are allowed to seize your assets without due process if they deem that those assets are a proceeds of crime. And there was one case yes.
This kind of reminds me, I believe it's called the Sippenhof that the Nazis instituted in Germany to attack any person they considered undesirable. And here we have it in America. They talk about black nationalist extremists, etc. and then they come out with something that you have alerted us to, we are going in the wrong direction.
Well, also, I just want to mention that I see the time is running out.
Mention it.
Oh, I just wanted to mention that there are very persistent rumors about thousands of sealed indictments having been passed through grand juries across the country. And coupled with this other thing, it might be a very ominous development. I hope I'm not being, in a way, I hope I am merely being a little bit too alarmist, and that the reality isn't as dire as some of these developments might suggest.
Right.
Zippenhof, Germany. Continue.
I wish I could break all the chains. Oh.